This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Welcome to the People Speak radio show. I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the U.S. and Canada by calling 1-888-429-5471. We also have the People Speak Virtual Radio Auditorium Room on paltalk.com, which is the largest chat program in the world, where you can join in to listen and interact. So this is a special show tonight, one, because I'm excited to be back as part of the People Speak, getting to interview, which is something that I love. And my guest tonight is Matsin A. Sanchez Gutierrez, who actually comes from where I live here in Indiana. And so I'm excited to have her on the show and to introduce her. Matsin A. Sanchez Gutierrez has a BS in International Business and Communication Studies and an MPA from Ball State University. Recently obtained her MBA at Anderson University. Matsin has a strong background in logistics and supply chain management. She is a supply chain manager at Celadon Logistics. She is actively involved in Indianapolis with a Hispanic professional community, currently serving as president of Prospanica, recently known as the National Society of Hispanic MBAs. She is also the current president of the Red Global MX, the Indianapolis chapter, which is a global organization of Mexican professionals abroad, and serves on the board for Project Stepping Stone, a college prep organization that provides resources, college experience, and scholarships to Hispanic high school students. One of her priorities as an active community leader is to support the advancement of Hispanic professionals through professional development, women's empowerment, and through advocacy for the underrepresented Latino college population. Welcome, Matsin.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me.
Yes. I'm really excited to be talking to you and to, as I shared with you in our pre-conversation, just to have an organic conversation, you know, with our audience, and, you know, to really get to display your work here in Indianapolis and how it connects to what's happening in the United States, especially right now. So tell our audience about your life, anything you want to share about your life growing up. What inspires you?
So I am originally from Querétaro, Mexico. I've been in the States, specifically Indiana. I have not left Indiana yet, and I refuse to leave Indiana. I moved here when I was 8, grew up in southern Indiana. Small town, Jennings County High School was my high school. Graduated and moved out of my house when I was 17, moved on to go to Ball State. Graduated from Ball State and decided that I wanted to really go into a field where I could have the opportunity to travel back home. So I really enjoy my field. I'm in, like you said, logistics and supply chain. So I've been here a total of 22 years, in Indiana. I love it. Sometimes I don't like the snow as much, but you know, I rather deal with snow than hurricanes. So I'm definitely Hoosier Mexican. That's what I call myself. I love, the Indianapolis community. So I've been here just in Indianapolis. I've been, a little bit over 7 years. So I always describe myself as an activist, as an active community leader here in Indianapolis, both with the Hispanic community and just overall, an advocate for education, and professional advancement. So, like you said, I've been in a couple organizations here in Indianapolis, and I think being part of a very dynamic and thriving Latino community here in Indianapolis makes me really proud, because I've seen a lot of growth within our own people here in Indiana. And in general, I like to stay involved, not just with the Latino organizations, but other organizations here that make up our community that are always working, of course, to making Indianapolis better. So thank you so much for hosting me, Elizabeth.
It's my pleasure. And if you were to share something outside of our conversation that you love about Indianapolis, just anything weird, strange, you know, unexpected, what do you like about Indianapolis, the place, whatever it might be?
I would say one of my favorite things is definitely not the weather, but I really enjoy Indianapolis, the city itself, because it's a growing city. I don't know if you've seen national polls on this, but we're like the city for younger professionals. It seems like from the companies that are moving into the city, we're becoming like the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. So that's really good in terms of attracting jobs to the city. And just the 7 years that I've been here, I've seen the growth. And not only that, but the people that are here and like, I'm not going to say Southern hospitality, we're Midwest hospitality, but the people here make up this community are great. And I've been so blessed and so lucky to really run into people that are here that always want to make sure that whatever position they're placed at or wherever their job might be and their involvement with the community, they always want to see some growth. And that's, I think that's great. So not only the community itself here, but I think in general, we're a sports city. So I'm a sports fan. So that's one of the things that I like about our city too. We have everything from hockey, professional hockey team, to soccer, baseball, basketball, Indianapolis Colts, of course, go Colts. So, you know, the city itself. I moved to Indianapolis right after the 2008-2009 economic downturn, and just the growth that I've seen in developing communities here. It's been great. So I think not only the jobs and the community itself, but how in the short period of time that I've been here, how much the city has grown in a very positive way. So I would say that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. And, you know, I was actually just talking to, I don't know if it was one of my kids, I don't know who it was, but I was telling them that I can't foresee myself leaving Indianapolis either. I feel like I'm rooting myself here, but really there's so much opportunity that I'm also finding. And so that's something really exciting about having this conversation. I have a lot to learn from you. I know that when I first moved to Indiana, I grew up in San Diego. And throughout my time here, I've been here since, I don't know, 16-ish. My dad, who lives in California, you know, he's asked me repeatedly about Mexicans in Indiana, and he's, you know, repeatedly been surprised to know that Mexicans really are this far north in the United States. So from that, I want to ask you, you know, what do you think the gift and the potential for the Latino community, Latino Latina community is here in Indianapolis?
I think just within the few organizations that I mentioned that I'm involved with, I think that's what's gotten me closer to the community itself from all standpoints, from the professional standpoint, from the in general community involvement, and for organization like us to really identify what the necessities are of the Latino community here and what kind of potential there is. If you look at some of the numbers, and I don't have them right on top of my head, but there was a study that was recently done by Bloomberg where they studied the Hispanic population and in general the immigrant population here in Indianapolis and the economic impact that we've had in the city. I mean, just to give you an example, there are a couple of areas hidden here in the city that, you know, you drove through them, 10, 15 years ago and you know, business that were shut down and communities that were almost kind of dead. Now you drive through them and you see a lot of Hispanic businesses just pop up everywhere. And I think out of our nature, I can tell you that because I come from a family that has always lived out of their own businesses, that's something that it's definitely happening here in Indianapolis. And I think it's not just the potential from an economic or entrepreneur standpoint, but it's also the economic impact that we can have with a much educated population, right? And where does that start? It starts with people like us who want to be involved, who are trying to get involved with organizations. You mentioned Project Stepping Stone. That's one of the organizations that I've been involved with for the last couple of years. I've seen a lot of growth just within that since 2004. That was actually started through one of the organizations that I'm currently serving as president, which is Prospanica. They were previously known as the National Society of Hispanic MBAs. And that's one of the organizations. And like I said earlier, you know, that's one of the things that is really always pulling me back to Indianapolis, making me not want to live because I see so much potential there. And organizations such as Project Stepping Stone that are fostering, and it's a college prep program, it's what it is. And so we take anywhere from, 90 to 120 students every summer. And they go through this college prep program you see the results later on. You see students that are graduating even from their master's. We have some students that are now working on their PhDs. And that's really great because you see them go into the workforce and you see them doing good and eventually giving back. And this is not just about the Latino thing, right? This is about them positively contributing to Indianapolis and making sure that that are not only them, but they're also mentoring other people to be active here and definitely promote growth in all aspects. So,
yeah, no, I appreciate all of that information, and I'm really excited to get to actually go into Project Stepping Stone in Indiana. So this is the People Speak, and I'm Elizabeth Valencia. And I'm here talking to our guest tonight, Maxine A. Sanchez Gutierrez, who's sharing with us some of her work and inspiration in Indianapolis with the Hispanic and Latino community. So talking about Project Stepping Stone, you know, I got to go on their website being projectsteppingstone.org, and I was watching one of the videos, and so I definitely want our audience to know more about it. One of the students quoted in the video shared that for her, this was by far one of the greatest leadership experiences she's had. So let's jump right in and tell the audience what Project Stepping Stone is here in Indiana.
So Project Stepping Stone is a college prep program that was started back in 2004. It was started by what was Prospanica today, formerly known, as you mentioned, the National Society of Hispanic MBAs. It was started by the leadership of that organization. And we identified that there was a need for students in particular, Latino students here in Indiana that, you know, I mean, if you look at the numbers, the high school dropout rates a couple years ago, and it seems like it's getting a little better. Currently, according to some studies that Prohispanica has done at a national level, 15% of Hispanics dropout rates are today, right? So that's actually gotten better from the 1980s. They were about 40%, right? They were way up there, and it looks like it's getting a lot better. And considering that currently about 18% of all high school students are Hispanic, that's a big impact. If you're seeing that many college and high school dropout rates as well. This program, it's basically like a college tour, if that's what you want to call it. But what we do is we take those students. I'll give you an example. Last summer, we took around 300 applications from students. We only admitted about 92 through the program. So basically, they get into the program, and we start out at one of the universities here, downtown Indianapolis, IUPUI, and from there, their parents come drop them off. They're with us the whole week. So we go from campus to campus. We do anything from mentoring to doing workshops for students on, you know, how do you even begin a process of application? We find that a lot of these students out there are first generation college students. So we obviously want to make sure that they're getting somewhere. And if they don't even know how to fill out an application or they don't understand the process of applying, you know, that's the first step right there. So anywhere from that to financial aid workshops to, you know, how to apply for scholarships. We do an etiquette dinner. We do resume building. Towards the end of the week, we do a career day where we, Prohispanica actually, and another organization that's called the Mexican Global Network, and we have an Indianapolis chapter. We put that together for them, where they come and about 100 Hispanic professionals, they'll come and mock interview the students. So we try to do as much as we can, and we've seen how a week of just, you know, mentoring the students, how much it can really impact their views on, you know, what they actually want to do after graduating from high school. So, like I said, some of those students that we've seen move on to do their master's and PhDs, and now they're out in the workforce. It's really great to see those things happening, you know, we've done, based on our data since 2004, we've seen that about an 86% of students that go through this program, they actually go on to college, whether it's a small community college or big state universities or even out of state universities. So it's great. And it's good for us, as we are catalyst, as we are professional organizations that are trying to foster and also promote education, not only at an MBA level, but at really all levels. So that's just my description of what Project Stepping Stone is.
Thank you. And one thing that I paid attention to is that you said students are away for a week. That means overnight?
Yes. So they move they move from campus to campus. So they actually stay at the dorms, and they do all these workshops. They do team building. They do everything. And then it's actually like a volunteer-based organization. So we don't have an actual executive director that's getting paid to run the show. They're community leaders just like I am. I've been involved with the program for a couple of years now. And I can personally say that, I've had family. I've had two brothers that have been through the program. I have two cousins. And then my youngest sister is going to be going through the program next year. So it's a volunteer-based organization is what it is. But it's an organization that really proves that when you bring a group of talented, dedicated group of individuals that want to make something work, you can make it happen.
So what kind of needs does Project Stepping Stone have that, you know, maybe we can talk about since it is a volunteer-based organization?
So volunteers, we've actually recruited volunteers through the same networks that we have here in Indianapolis. A lot of times it's really also sponsorship funds, because at the end of the week, we don't just make them go through the program. We also visit some of the largest companies here in Indianapolis. For example, this the past time we did the program, the students got to visit the State House. They went to Eli Lilly, which is one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies here, actually worldwide, and it's based out of Indianapolis. And then visit a couple companies that are actually a corporate sponsor of ours. They do that for us. But we also, one of the biggest challenges, and yet for many Hispanics, economic factors today remain an obstacle for college enrollment. And we see the same thing with these organizations. I mean, if we don't have the funds to run these organizations and actually provide them with funds, it's really hard for anyone to, I mean, as much as you want to consider going off to college, if you don't have the funds, it's just not as easy. Now, when you talk about, and we don't have to go into detail on this, but, you know, when you talk about a student's immigration status, it's not always easy for anyone to have access to those college dollars. And, you know, having those economic factors be an obstacle, it's always going to be a challenge. And for us, at the end of the week, usually we start out on a Sunday, and graduation is usually on a Saturday. We give out a lot of money in scholarships, and we want to make sure that they stay here in our community. I'm not saying, you know, students can't go out of state to go to other universities, but we want to make sure that we're impacting that group here.
Yeah, no, that's incredible work. And I really want to ask the question, how many in Project Stepping Stone are DACA recipients?
That's a very good question. And that's actually something that through the application program, that's not a question that we ask, but it's because a lot of students are DACA students. It seems like, you know, when I moved here to the States back then, students were a little more shy about that. I feel like that's changing a lot. So students, a lot of them, they don't really care at this point. They're coming forward and saying, you know what? I'm a DACA student. I'm in a position now with everything that's going on politically and with laws that are going into effect. We don't know when or what's going to happen. It kind of puts them in jeopardy. And I've actually seen some DACA students that went through the Project Stepping Stone. I mentioned one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies here in Indianapolis. There's actually a student that went through the Project Stepping Stone program, graduated from high school, went on to college, is working on her master's degree right now. She's a scientist. She ended up getting hired by this pharmaceutical monster, and now she feels her job. She feels like her job is threatened because she might lose the opportunity to work legally here in the United States through her profession. So it's just it's gonna make it more challenging for everyone. And we still want to make sure that we're encouraging people to not have those things hold them back. I don't think any final decision has been made by anyone. So in my personal opinion, and this is what we tell people all the time, you know, just keep fighting for what you love and what you want to do in life. Things will come later. Obstacles will always be there. But as long as you always follow what you want to do, that should be enough, at least to make sure that you're doing what you want to do, right? Even though it might be an obstacle, but don't let those type of things right now hold you back from doing that.
Yeah, and I think it's important, you know, especially with what's happening, to talk a little bit about DACA. And we have a couple of minutes before we go to our break. But just for those who are listening who might not know what DACA is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. This was on June 15, 2012, when the Secretary of Homeland Security made the announcement that certain people who came to the U.S. as children and met certain guidelines could request consideration of deferred action, safe from being deported for a period of 2 years with a renewal. It's currently, Congress is currently has 6 months to try to come up with a plan, because President Trump is no longer allowing initial requests for DACA. The other difficult part is that there are many DACA recipients who have, if they have their work permit expiring after March 5th, 2018, cannot reapply for renewal. And those whose work permit expires before March 5th have less than a month to go to apply for their renewal, which means, you know, as you were sharing, Maxine, that a big thing that's going to come up right now is the economic hardship of having to collect the fee money along with, you know, life happening, which is $495 to be able to renew. And this is so important because it's all over the news. And it's, you know, I know here in Indiana, we have so many organizations trying to help DACA recipients pay for their fees so that they're able to renew, from those that qualify to renew. Hopefully, you know, while Congress looks at passing something that will, you know, further propel these recipients to stay living outside of the shadows, to embrace life fully. You know, many of these DACA recipients are, you know, have been here since they were babies, since they were kids. So in speaking about that, before we go to our break, do you have anything to correct me on in what I shared, and any thoughts on DACA that we could leave our audience with, hopefully if somebody's able to call in, you know, during our break?
Not from the information that you just shared. It's just something to really consider, or to really, I mean, most people, it doesn't affect them. Some people, they do. As for 800,000 DACA currently students, and I always refer to them as students because that's one of the requirements. Not everyone that applies gets DACA. Like, there are certain things that make you qualify for them. That one of them is like actually having a high school diploma, or, you know, being a college student, which really helps you a lot with it. It's just a lot of people that are going to be affected. 800,000 people is a lot. And there are people that are hoping to someday go into workforce and really contribute to our society and our economy here. So I think that's all I have to add to your comments.
Yeah, so let's definitely bring that back. I'll bring that back with a quote from you about DACA after our break. I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and we will be right back with our guest, Maxine A. Sanchez Gutierrez, and any audience questions after this message break.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to The People Speak, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and we're back with our guest, Maxine A. Sanchez Gutierrez. We actually have a caller on the line. Caller, will you give us your first name, location, and your question or comment for our guest?
Hello, Elizabeth. This is Mike in California, and my question for Maxine is, does she have any strong feelings about President Donald Trump and his comments, which I find to be bigoted against many groups, including Muslims and Mexicans?
I have my personal thoughts. And being, you know, as respectful as possible, I totally disagree with the circus that he seems to be running. I find it very unfortunate because whether you're a Muslim or you're Mexican or you're in general an immigrant or anyone that is, you know, kind of a visitor to this country, to this great country, a lot of people make contributions to this country. And I hope that, you know, unfortunately, this has brought up a lot of tension in the country overall. And I hope that people do realize that it's not the way it's really making it sound to be. For people like me who have been here, I've been here since I was 8, and I know Elizabeth mentioned some DACA students. I'm a dual citizen, so I have the U.S. and Mexican citizen, and I can tell you, you say your name is Mike?
Yes.
So, Mike, I can tell you that, and this is so weird. You're going to find this really weird, right? And this is not to get off the subject, but for me, because I've been in this country since I was 8 years old, hearing my president, and the reason why I say my president is because I am a U.S. citizen and I'm very proud. I have all of my families here, both of my parents. I have a total of 6 brothers and 2 sisters. I have brothers that have served the military. And I can tell you that none of my brothers or sisters or family members, they're definitely not criminals. They're definitely not rapists or, you know, any of that. And I sometimes I would like to think that that was part of a way of him getting votes through his campaign. And if, you know, he did get votes because of those comments, then that's very unfortunate for someone like me. And like I said, I've been here since I was 8. I feel like it has been that way. I've been in this country for most of my life, and this sounds really funny, but when I go to a football game, or I'm in an event where they play the national anthem, and they play the U.S. national anthem, I get goosebumps all the time because I'm so, like, it makes me proud. And this is going to sound really bad. When I go to Mexico, and I'm very proud of being Mexican, I actually work for a company that allows me to travel down there quite a bit. And I'm very proud of my heritage and being Mexican. And I try to go down there as much as I can. I would actually consider someday moving back. I don't think this is the right time, but I don't have the same feeling when I hear the Mexican national anthem. And I always ask myself why. And one day I was talking to my mother, and I said, I don't know why when I listen to the Mexican national anthem, I don't get goosebumps. I don't get that emotional. But every time I hear the U.S. national anthem, it gives me the goosebumps. And she told me, she's like, that's because you consider yourself an American. You've been here for that long. And going back to your question, to kind of hear those type of comments coming from the top leader of a company, or country, it's to me, it's quite disappointing. I don't think it really discourages me or a lot of Hispanics from proving different than what he's stating, that we're criminals or whatever he has said. I think if you're a person that loves this country and you want the best for everyone, you're not gonna let those type of comments really affect you. I know it really affects in many cases our children, because they're like, why is our president saying this, you know? But to me, in a personal level, it bothers me, but it doesn't bother me to the point where, you know, I, in comparison to a lot of people, I start attacking or making comments about the negative comments about the president on social media or, you know, trash.
Well, I did want to ask you what you thought of about the wall that he wants to build, but I just, it's pretty clear, right?
Yeah, it's pretty clear. I think we have the money's definitely not going to come from Mexico, but if which he's not considering paying for it. If we were to consider, I think that's a lot of money that we could be investing in education, and you know, healthcare system, and we can invest that in many. So definitely the wall. I think people are always going to find a way when you see people with necessities, and people are like willing to risk their whole lives to come to America, and whether we have a president like this or whether I hear of white supremacist groups and all this and that, I still think that the U.S. is the greatest country in the world. I strongly believe that. Thanks for your question. Do you have any other questions?
Like you, I'm also a Mexican-American, and I've been here since I was very, very little. And I had to go through the immigration process, you know, in some very, very difficult ways. So this touches upon that quote that I have from you, Matsin, where you said, and I quote you, "They work this hard to get their college degree, and now they're going to take away their employment." And what I really, really appreciate about that quote is that it touches upon the inhumaneness of giving a people permission to come out of the shadows and then suddenly, you know, just removing that and saying, you know what, never mind, right? And I think, you know, our goal needs to be to build upon, you know, what we have. Now, DACA is just a temporary Band-Aid, but it's a temporary Band-Aid that worked. And we see the incredible economic benefits, but beyond that, we see the lives that are being touched by the, for example, teachers that are working with kids in schools who have DACA, you know, getting to impact these youth. We get to see it everywhere. And so really going back again to Project Stepping Stone, which is where you work, what do you think the potential is for the work that Project Stepping Stone is doing here in Indianapolis on a global scale?
Earlier, in reference to Project Stepping Stone, I think, and I mentioned this earlier, we try not to discourage students on DACA or anything like that, because I think the willingness, if students have the willingness to complete this program, to get through college, I think the more you work on developing yourself, you can develop yourself anywhere in the world. You really can. And even though the workforce might be a little bit different, I think it would, anybody can have impact on anywhere you move, if you have the tools, right? And if you have the knowledge. So, and that kind of, that, that your question about like the global aspect of it, You mentioned the other organization that I'm involved with, and it kind of brings me back to Project Stepping Stone too, because we have a partnership with them. The other organization is actually a global network of Mexican professionals living abroad. And what it is, it was a project that was started by the Mexican government to highlight the work that Mexican professionals are doing abroad. And so one of the things that that we're doing with Project Stepping Stone is actually matching Mexican professionals here in Indianapolis. And the students do not have to be Mexican, because we've had everything go through Project Stepping Stone. White, Latino, Spanish, non-Spanish speakers, they go through the program, and we try to match up profiles of professionals. Let's say we have 20 engineers as part of that chapter, Indianapolis chapter of the Global of Mexican Network. We try to match them up with students like that to make sure that we're fostering them, to make sure that we're coaching them, we're mentoring them. We're making sure that they have opportunities in terms of internships, of community projects, any kind of mentoring that we can bring them. And I think that the more that we commit ourselves as the professional organizations that we've talked about tonight, I think that the more committed we are, the more prepared these people are going to be moving forward. Whether you go to school, and you go to community college, or you go to like a college or an Ivy League school, if you have mentors, if you have people that have your back and they're willing to take their time to coach you and make you a world-class citizen, you can be successful in the States, or you can be successful in China. Anywhere else you go, you can definitely do a lot of things for yourself. So.
Yeah, and we know the United States is also successful because of its partnership with China. So,
yes.
You know, it's the United States is not a success on its own. And I think that's a really important thing to bring up in our conversations, to change the narrative, especially with people who really think that this country, you know, is only home for a certain type of people. You know, that we're not self-sufficient, that, you know, our own history is connected to the history of many other peoples from its very beginnings, you know. But yeah, it's a very powerful thing to know that we're working to educate Latinos and Latinas. And I found that really powerful that you're working towards matching Mexican professionals to all, that they don't have to be Mexican. And that reminds me of what's happening, you know, what with, you know, right now with the hurricanes, and how Mexico has actually been reaching out to help, to provide aid for, you know, for Texas with Hurricane Harvey, you know, and all of this. And to see that humanity, despite the fact that we have so many that, you know, don't want to acknowledge that Mexicans and Mexican Americans, right, are deserving and worthy of the right to call themselves Americans, even if they're not in the United States. But, you know, if they're even under DACA, to be able to say, hey, I'm an undocumented American or an undocumented Hoosier, but I simply don't have the paper to show it, but I'm still human. And so that to me was really, really powerful, Maxine. And what do you think that as a community, you know, our audience is in different places, what do you think that as a community we can do right now to be a part of the change and to be supportive of DACA recipients, of a community, or our students, our 800,000 students, our immigrant community, and so on?
Yeah, I think in terms of anyone wanting to really make a difference in support of DACA, I think that the best way to go about it is not just to rally. I'm not against rallying. I think it's a good way. And that's one of the things I love about this country is freedom of speech. You can say whatever in the world you want, right? So not only that, but also actively calling your government officials, your congressmen, your senators, and writing letters and really staying positive. Keep a positive vibe and do not, like, you know, as much as some people want to have it easy, it's not going to be easy. And I don't know. I actually do not know what the intentions are of the president, whether he think he's really, because he really hasn't come out. He has said in a couple interviews that he supports it. We don't know, because he obviously is not going to make a decision. But I think that the fact that they put it on hold until, you know, not on hold, but they're giving Congress time to act upon it. I think that the fact that they were going to end it, I think it had to happen and it was going to happen. It actually didn't take me by surprise. I think that that's the only way that Congress is going to take action. But as part of you, going back to your question, as part of the community, if you are a person that is pro DACA and you support it, I think that the best thing to do is reach out to your government officials and push them to make decisions and really stay positive about it. You know, I mean, I talk to people all the time and they're concerned. They're like, oh, you know, what's going to happen to me? The government forced me. They didn't force me, but they had us to be part of DACA, registered for through the government, really, with all my personal information. Next thing you know, they cancel it. And then now, what are they going to do? Are they going to eventually deport 800,000 DACA people? So, I mean, that's just, you know, to me, it's not realistic, but it's also, I mean, you can't really put those thoughts in your head, but you do have to stay positive. So I think that that's the only way, you know?
Yeah, no, thank you. And I think it's also important for people to know that this isn't anything new. We've had, you know, large deportations in the past. We've had, United States citizens deported along with those who were not citizens. It's also important to know that we even had, you know, United States citizens crossing into Mexico illegally. Yeah. And that there's a huge history there that we don't acknowledge. What do you think that local businesses can do to be supportive, you know, along these lines of rallying and calling congressmen, senators, writing letters and staying positive?
I think there are a few companies, and I'll mention one of them, Cummins. They're actually right now in the U.S., they're headquartered here in Indianapolis downtown. We have a big manufacturing facility in Columbus, Indiana. Cummins as a company, they bring a lot of engineers from Mexico. They bring a lot of qualified people. They bring even accountants, salespeople. And I know this because a lot of them are part of the Mexican professional network here in Indianapolis. Their CEO actually, he had a statement that went out to the media. I believe it was last week. Tom Linebarger, he's the CEO, and I've had the privilege of meeting him in person. He's a great person, and because he does see the contributions that Mexicans are making to his company, and not only that, but as a company, they're really active. You know this here in Indianapolis and all over the state. They're a very active company and very successful. I think if our government officials are even seeing people within power, such as Tom Linebarger, who's the CEO of Cummins, I think they have a lot to say as well, you know? And I think it's not just the people that are being affected, in our community, but it's also those leaders that are probably going to they're going to make influential impact if they do make statements or actually act upon it, right? So I think that's you mentioned businesses and I think companies that are, that especially I mentioned the pharmaceutical companies that are here. Those companies that are very global and that have a lot of diversity and inclusion initiatives, they want to be inclusive of other groups. They're going to highly consider something like that, because at the end of the day, it is workforce and it is talent that they're looking for. They're not looking necessarily for, you know, I mean, obviously they have to look for a paper that says that you can legally work, right? But that doesn't, if you don't have that, if you don't have that paper that says you're a U.S. citizen or you have a work permit, it doesn't disqualify you from being talented and being able to contribute to a company, to a company's success, right? So, I mean, that's just my thought on that as far as the involvement from company leaders.
Yeah, and businesses recognize that. Like you said, they recognize that, you know, there is a lot, there are a lot of skills and talent, and it's also, you know, part of the exploitation that has happened, right? That we've seen throughout history, that this is why, especially with the Latino community and the Mexican, you know, community, you know, why Latinos find themselves in this immigration issue that seems very confusing, sort of like a vicious cycle. So that's really important. And, you know, as we're heading, you know, towards the last few minutes with our audience, share with us, you know, anything that you think might inspire those of us who might be on the fence about being involved. Maybe even those who feel and agree that, you know, DACA recipients should go and that we shouldn't pay attention to this issue.
I think, and some people are not as, I don't even know what word to use. They're not as probably in the loop of what's going on with DACA and all of this that has recently been in the news. But I mean, everyone here has a neighbor that's probably Mexican. Okay, I'm not saying everyone, but you know, I think, and a lot of companies, going back to the businesses that you were mentioning, a lot of companies here, and even at a national level, for example, Prospanica that I'm part of, that's a national organization, and a lot of companies that are corporate sponsors at a national level, they've addressed this. They've addressed this since our national convention last year. This year, for the first time, and that's actually coming up in 2 weeks, we partner up for the first time with a Black MBA. So now, for the first time after 31 years, the Hispanic and Black MBAs are doing their national convention together. And one of the things that, and actually strongest programs, whether it's here in Indianapolis and at a national level, is diversity and inclusion. And that's often a topic that is talked about within the organization. And a lot of companies here in Indianapolis that are based here, not even based here, but, you know, there's a big presence of their ERG groups, which are employee resource groups, or diversity and inclusion initiatives. They're addressing these type of discussions within their own employees. Why? Because that's what they're there for. They're employee resource groups. You know, you might find employees that are like, man, I am a DACA student and I'm about to lose my job, you know? So a lot of times, because they do have this diversity and inclusion initiatives and they have employees that may be DACA, those people are pushing their company leaders to speak up for them. Some may not be speaking up, but at the end of the day, and going back to your comment on like, what can we do to inspire, and the question you had earlier about how can people act upon it, just stay positive. I have good faith that something good is going to happen. That hasn't always been the case when I have a good feeling about something, but right now that's the only thing that we can do. We have to stay positive, and we have to push our leaders, and even within your companies, if you feel like they need, and that is not always going to happen, but you know, if your company is supportive, they're not always going to be supportive. If they are, they're going to speak for you. And I think, when you do have good leaders in your companies that value any employee for their talent, that's great. That's a good thing. in terms of leadership, that it's good to have leaders like that. So that's just my comment with that.
Yeah. And the other day, you know, we at my job, we also brought in a speaker who is a bilingual educator and rapper. He's known as Güero Loco.
Oh, yeah.
G-U-E-R-O, Güero Loco, L-O-C-O. Totally giving him a shout out here. And he came and he shared with us his experiences and the importance of really crossing borders ourselves, crossing into different spaces outside of our comfort zones. And I think the point of, you know, utilizing our own voices to ask that more gets done is so important, along with voting mm-hmm. in the midterm elections and checking our voter registrations and making sure yeah. that we are making wiser decisions. And so, you know, we're getting ready now to wrap up. I want to make sure that our audience gets the information for the Project Stepping Stone. I want to remind you to visit Project Stepping Stone, which is projectsteppingstone.org, projectsteppingstone.org. And Maxine, do you have any final words for us as we finalize our interview?
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy this type of radio shows because it's like just the name of it, the people speak. I think it's good, and it's good that I'm very proud to live in a country where I can go on the air and speak my mind. So thank you so much for having me, hope to follow you guys now more often.
Thank you, Maxine, and to all of you, you've been listening to The People Speak with your host Elizabeth Valencia, and I'd like to thank our guest Maxine for taking part in this interview. And I want to remind you again to visit the website projectsteppingstone.org. Again, projectsteppingstone.org. Thank you to everyone for listening, for participating. It was a great joy to be a part of this. Have a good night.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.